Hi, you're listening to Two Booked Up, a podcast about business and personal development books and the conversations they ignite. I'm Rowena Mabbott.
And I'm Shelley Tonkin-Smith. Today we're going to be talking about how we lazy genius our lives and how lazy genius principles have shown up in our lives and help you to find ways that you can lazy genius your own life. Now, if you listened to last week's show where we went over the lazy genius principles, you'll know that the lazy genius is certainly not my own term.
It's from the latest book we're talking about, The Lazy Genius Way by Kendra Adati. Being a lazy genius isn't about doing more or doing less. It's about doing what matters to you.
Yes, and so that's why we thought we would get practical today, talk about a few examples of how the lazy genius principles have helped us to identify and name what has mattered in our lives and to inspire you to do the same. And just a reminder that if you're enjoying what we're discussing here about the lazy genius way, go and grab yourself a copy of the book if you haven't done so already. There's The Lazy Genius Way, and most recently Kendra Adachi has released a new book called The Lazy Genius Kitchen. But for now, let's dive into the Lazy Genius Way and how it applies to our lives. So, just to recap, what does it mean to be a lazy genius? In the book, Kendra explains that being a lazy genius is kind of finding this middle ground of being genius about what matters and lazy about everything that doesn't matter. And so to do that, you've got to find out and name what matters for you. Not for what matters to everyone else, but what matters for you. It's not about being mediocre. It's about going all in on the things that matter. And I really love that because I don't want to be mediocre, and I don't think anyone listening to this podcast wants to be mediocre either. But this book reminds me that I will be mediocre if I try to be a genius about everything. So Kendra has convinced me to be this lazy genius instead.
And it reminds me of some golden advice that I received at my first ever business conference. I suspect it might have been even last century. It's a very long time ago. And the advice was, rather than aiming to do 100 things 1% better, we should do one thing 100% better. And I think the lazy genius approach kind of builds on that. In today's hustle culture, the lazy genius approach is different, as Kendra encourages us to focus on what matters to us, with an overall message: be a genius about the things that matter, but lazy about those that don't.
And we become a lazy genius by applying the 13 lazy genius principles outlined in the Lazy Genius Way. So I'm going to kick things off with lazy genius principle number one and some examples of how this has shown up in my life. Lazy genius principle one is to decide once. So I'll give you an example that I love and that I've used is to decide once that for kids' friends' birthday parties, they get books. And so that's my one decision. If my kids are invited to a birthday party, that kid is getting a book for their birthday. And I love books, so this is ideal for me. It really works with my vibe and even with my kids' vibe. They love their books. So I'll go and actually just buy extra copies of the books that they've loved and put them in my cupboard. And then when it comes to a birthday party, I grab one of those books. So that's decided once. I don't have to then go to the shop before the birthday party. Boom, decided. Principle number two kind of riffs off of that, and that is start small. And this is a huge one for me. When I want to approach a new thing, I want to go big, go all in. And then what happens is it just feels too overwhelming, right? So I've really had to go, how can I start small? And for me, an example here would be my bullet journaling. So you can go all out with bullet journaling, with spreads and calligraphy and different pens, and it can be all so beautiful, and that's all very much up my alley. But I found I wasn't doing it because it was too big. So when I went to start small, I just went, we do the daily log. It's in a black pen. I do three things that I don't want to forget about that day, and I do it every day. And it can be scrappy, and it can be quick, and it can take me 1 minute
but just do the bare minimum. And in fact, there is an idea of like actually just keeping it to a minimum. So next time, like for me, next time I journal, I know it's not going to take me long. Whereas if I did a beautiful spread yesterday, then today I'm like, oh, this is going to take me far too long. So starting small, it's a huge principle in itself.
I'm going to reiterate that start small is a really valuable principle and one that I always use in my life, but also with my clients, which we're going to talk about in the next episode. But I do want to just emphasize that start small is really valuable and decide once. I think they're two really key principles, and I can see why Kendra made them number one and number two. So now leading on to number three, and this is probably the one that I have definitely remembered best from the entire book. And it's principle three is ask the magic question. Now, the magic question that Kendra shares is, what can I do now to make life easier later? So this absolutely biggest take-home message, and I've been using it for everything. It's been super helpful for my family and with my parenting. And probably at first glance, Kendra shares in the book, it's kind of hard to see how something as simple as maybe getting a pot out for dinner at 4 p.m. will make life easier later. But somehow it really does. And so before we even came to record this podcast, I'd already scrubbed and cut the potatoes ready for dinner, so that little tiny step that only took a few minutes means that I feel like I've already started dinner. So it's, I think psychologically it makes a difference, but it also means that when you come along to whatever it is that you're doing, you've already started. And so it's easier to continue in your action rather than feeling like you have to start taking action. So I think that it ties quite nicely with start small, but it also is kind of like going, well, I'm already in action, so I'm just continuing with the action I've already started. So the other principle that I think ties really nicely with this is principle number four. And again, this is one of the ones that really feels close to my heart right at the moment, but also it's aligned with a lot of the work that I've done in my business. And principle four is live in the season. And by that, Kendra means you need to name it and remember it passes. So enjoy it. And then she reminds us to do the next right thing. So from my perspective, living in the season applies for both the actual season, so the weather, but it also applies to the season of life we're in. So for example, my kids are teenagers, and I have to say it's very different from the middle school or the younger kids season. And as we're recording this, we're in the middle of school holidays, so my kids are at mainstream school and they have a scheduled vacation right now. And teenage school holiday vacation time is very different from, say, 5 years ago. I hardly see my kids. They're in their rooms on their devices or wanting to hang out with their friends. Whereas 5 years ago, we would have been having outings and doing fabulous things together. Now, I could feel really sad about the fact that I don't have these beautiful little kids anymore who want to hang out with me. Or I could be also feeling like, come on, let's get through this. I can't wait for the future season when they've moved out and left home and I can hang out and do whatever I want. But that's not being true to living in the season. So I think this message is about living in the season, naming it, acknowledging it, recognizing the good about this season right now, like the fact I've got these kids who one of them's more than 6 foot tall, so he's quite useful now. He can reach stuff that I can't reach. So, you know, let's be grateful for these small things. But then trying not to be too sad about the past or too anxious about moving forward too quickly. It's just being present in the moment. So I think that's a really lovely principle.
Yeah, I was almost tempted to say, let's dive into this one in another podcast episode because it's so powerful. I think you can exist in the state of longing for the past and hoping for the future and yet still being content in the current season that you're in. And I think it really helps us in those times when we are feeling like, oh my goodness, I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling, you know, maybe dissatisfied with wherever I'm at right now, but to go, that's okay. You can acknowledge the negatives, but also know that those negatives come with a set of positives. And I love this permission that you can actually sit with these two things that are true, that there's aspects of this part of my life that I feel dissatisfied with, but this is seasonal. It passes. And as you say, it's not like it passes is like, oh, I just need to get through this kind of it passes. It's let's appreciate this season for what it's in. And I found this has been very, very powerful to be quite mindful and be present with where you're at now. So the next principle that Kendra talks about is Lazy Genius principle number 5, and that is to build the right routines. And I think it is in those seasons, like just coming off of the season one, it's in the seasons when you're feeling overwhelmed and when you're feeling like you don't know where to start, that routines really help you. And Kendra had a lovely way of describing routines. She says, routines are on-ramps for somewhere else. They're not destinations in themselves. And Kendra has this lovely domino analogy of where, if you imagine a line of dominoes lined up, where is that first domino tipping that's going to tip you into, like, you know, crazy territory and like negative territory? So let's address that one. That's where you need to find a routine. So like if it's dinner time for you, or if it's getting ready to leave the house or whatever, like find where are you struggling? Where are things like going awry? And then build a routine around that. So for me, an example with my homeschool is our book learning. So we've got our real like core curriculum. It's the boys reading and spelling and maths. And what I found is that we have a routine so that we get that done first thing in the morning. And then they'll often go play outside actually after we've done the book learning, because then they need a break. They need a little bit of physicality, and then read aloud kind of naturally follows from that. So it's that domino effect of like, if we can start with book learning, we do that straight after our breakfast. And I think I feel happy that side of homeschooling is done. And then we've got this freedom and flexibility for the rest of the day. But the routine to get us up to book learning is really supportive. And how about you, Ro? You're really great with your morning routine. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, look, I think I love the idea of the routines as being something that on-ramps you. And definitely my morning routine on-ramps me for the day. And I think the best example is what happens when I don't do my morning routine. Because that's when everything gets bad quite quickly. Mostly it's not that everything falls apart, but it's just that I don't feel like my best version of myself. So I'm crankier, I snap more, I haven't started my day in a grounded way. So my morning routine is something that it moves around a bit, but the core elements of it include a bit of meditation, some yoga stretches. Those are the two things that absolutely are non-negotiable. And then I build in a walk at various points, generally with the dog. The dog walk is movable because the weather obviously impacts that. But if I haven't done the meditation or at least the yoga stretches, I don't have the patience for all of the demands that come at my way as soon as I kind of step into the family space. And so I think those sorts of routines are really important. So when I build my routine and one thing follows the next, so my meditation is followed by my yoga, which is followed by some affirmations, which is followed by strapping my shoes on and going out the door with the dog. So that just one kind of triggers the next thing, and they just flow together beautifully. I completely get that. And the domino effect is really important. I also think the domino effect links beautifully to the next principle, which I think you might like to talk about, Shelley.
Oh, house rules. Lazy Genius principle number 6. And as much as I kind of resist against rules, these are really supportive, especially in my parenting, because I think they're supportive for the kids. And I think when I look at it in Kendra's framing of, instead of getting enraged and protective, we are aiming to be engaged and connected. That's the aim of having house rules, is to engage with each other on, like, within these boundaries, these safe boundaries. We're aiming for that connection, and we're setting the stage for connection. And I think this is definitely something that I think I want to lean into more. You know, this is one of the principles that I do feel I can improve upon. Although we were watching the rugby on the weekend, all our Southern Hemisphere teams didn't do so well. We all lost to the Northern Hemisphere teams. So we're very sad here in South Africa and Australia. But we were watching the rugby, and one of my husband's harsh rules, he said, When it's rugby on, I'm singing the anthems. And he went belting off the Wales anthem and the Australian anthem and, of course, the South African anthem, which is in 4 different languages. He's like, house rule is that rugby equals anthems, and I'm singing them. So far, that's one example of harsh rules that we actually do have. Can you tell us, you're more of an upholder, Rose, so can you tell us if you've got more harsh rules and how they help you?
I love that your husband, Garen, has been, his house rule is sing the anthems. That's fabulous. Oh, I wish we had much more creative house rules. Our house rules are a little bit more of the Kendra style, I think. And as you mentioned, being an upholder, house rules are definitely my thing. But not everyone in my house remembers the house rules. That said, we do have some decide once house rules. So, for example, we have a shoes off rule, and we decided that before we moved into this house, which was a new house to us, we said, right, new house, shoes off. Some of our visitors don't necessarily love that rule, but most of them are compliant when they see that we're walking around in our socks or sometimes slippers, depending on the weather. School bags into cubbies, we absolutely have that. We in fact built cubbies particularly in order to put school bags in. So when I'm thinking about the routines, how this ties in with this principle as well, for us it was the end of day, like they're returning from school time, that was the most problematic for me. So we have shoes off, school bags go into the cubbies, lunch bags come out when you get home from school, which meant the lunch bags and the lunch boxes and things that my kids would have would come out of their school bag and get put next to the kitchen sink ready to be washed up so that they'd be fresh for the following day's lunch. Now, these are really small things, but when everybody does them, as in really the kids do them, the household just flows more easily and more happily. But there is just one which I find is quite challenging. In these very special purpose-built cubbies, everybody has a key hook. And my sons, who have keys, and myself, we put our keys in there all the time. That way we know where our keys are. But my husband doesn't do that. So he never puts his keys back on the hook in his cubby. So he has his own cubby. It's just for him, and his keys are never in there. He's got two empty hooks instead, which beautifully ties in with principle number 7, put everything in its place, which, of course, means everything needs a place, hence my hook for the keys. This principle, I think, is really key for me because I am wanting to more intentionally, embracing a minimalist approach, which means streamlining down to what's genuinely essential, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But part of it is having a place for everything, because if it doesn't have a place to go back to, it just ends up being dumped and looking like clutter. So in my family, it might mean my kids have spots where the Lego goes. We have a lot of Lego, both my boys and my husband and I, we all quite love our Lego. So we have tubs for our Lego, and the Lego stays in the playroom. And, of course, in your kitchen, you always know where you put your plates. Otherwise, how would you find your plates? So it's more about having a place for everything, and I think that's a fabulous principle.
I was also just thinking, when I was thinking about house rules and everything has a place, I was like, oh, my kids don't have school bags, being at homeschool, but I have a bag for each of them with all of their books for their reading and their sort of language arts stuff. And each of them has the bag and it's got all the readers, all the books, all the things that I would need for that particular time. So I probably do have some harsh rules. I'm not aware of it, you know. I've needed help with this. So I've bought Kendra's new book, The Lazy Genius Kitchen. So she's helping me with that too. Because the first step is to actually get rid of what you don't need. And so I've realized I've got like 3 pans, like, and for pancakes. And we eat gluten-free, so we don't even make pancakes. So like, I'm like, I don't need 3 pancake pans. So it's like, you know, getting rid of those things. But I think you recognize that when everything has a place. And then when those places get too full, then you go, hold on. And as she says, you don't have to be a minimalist necessarily, but everything just needs a place. But I think that can also indicate to you, maybe you've got too much stuff if it's not fit in its place. So, interesting. But I think interesting.
It's a great example, Shelley. I think it also illustrates how so many of the principles work together. Just even there where you've said you eat gluten-free. So that was a decide once. We now eat gluten-free. That's your decision. And so now, therefore, there's a whole bunch of follow-on decisions that you don't really need to make because you don't eat pancakes now because you don't eat gluten, unless you made gluten-free pancakes. But so, it's the flow-on from that you've decided once, and then it has influenced a bunch of other principles as well. So I really like that. And I think that's one of the key messages as well from Kendra's book, is that each principle works in collaboration and in connection with the other principles. Which is probably a good link to principle 8, which is about working with connection. which is letting people in. And it's really a reminder that we can't live well without connection and without community, because a lot of us need to be reminded about this, particularly after the pandemic, where many, many people around the world experienced quite extended lockdown periods. And so thinking about lockdown, I have a lovely example where during lockdown, when in where I am, we could only go within 5 kilometres of our home. And so if your friends didn't live within that radius, you couldn't see them, or family or anybody. And so my neighbour and I, who would live just to, she just lives a couple of doors up, we'd walk our dogs together through a large local park, which was fabulous because it deepened our friendship. So that's the connection piece. But it also gave us time in nature, which is always restorative, and we were in the local area. So we each met people that we knew, and we actually helped each other meet other people. So the experience and benefits were, in fact, so positive by doing that, that I then reached out to other local friends and arranged to meet them for walks too. And so connection was key, and it helped all of us with our mental health and well-being. And so now, of course, post-lockdown, catching up with friends for a walk or a coffee or some lunch is one that I'm trying to work pretty hard at maintaining, because it is so good for the soul. And so, and the other one, Shelley, of course, is collaborating with you on this podcast. It's been a great example of this principle of letting people in and working well, working with connection and community. But we're going to dive a little bit more into how it relates to business in our next episode. But have you got any other examples how this let people in principle shows up in your life?
Yeah, well, definitely, like you said, our collaboration with this podcast has been so cool, and that emerged out of an accountability arrangement that I think we, you know, also came through out of lockdown. We had an accountability arrangement with several other people, and it really helped me to get through lockdown. We were all kind of going through this similar experience together, and so to have that connection in a time of disconnection was really important. And as you were talking about, you know, reaching out with your friends in the local area, you know, I think as an introvert, lockdown in many respects was okay for me. I didn't have the major loss that I think a lot of extroverts had, but I did. We are still human beings, and we still have this need for connection and letting people in. So just to say also to the introverts out there, this applies to you too. So I think it's important to let people in. You can let them in on your own terms and do it in a way. So like I know there are people who don't want to have people over at their house, but then go and meet in the park, go and go for a walk together. And you know, you can do it in your own way, in a way that makes you feel comfortable, but also don't worry about the surface things. Like, Be you, and invite those people in. But yes, from a homeschooling perspective, I also just wanted to mention, like, we have a homeschool co-op. I've got memberships online that I'm part of, communities. I've also sought out expert help. So letting people in, I think, also involves getting expert help, like maybe a coach, or like my boys are going to a handwriting course. So I think that all of that is getting people in and living life in community, I think, is a really powerful principle for all of us. And you learn so much from the people that you associate with. And one of the things I've learned from you is principle 9 is batching. So to go and do one task over and over again. So like meal planning, making your meals all in one go, and then, you know, probably freezing them, and then you've got then got meals for the whole week, but you've like been in cooking mode in one go. And I think this comes back to the decision fatigue. If you're in one context, your brain functions better. When you're context switching all the time, your brain is like, where was I? Oh my goodness. And I think this is where it's important to decide what matters to you. So I've heard a couple of people just on the interwebs, they get all judgy about Kendra, of like, well, why is she doing the laundry anyway? Why isn't her husband doing the laundry? And then they nitpick her actual process of doing the laundry. And they're like, oh no, this process is flawed or stupid or whatever. This is important to Kendra. It works in her household. She's had this arrangement. So don't go judgy on Kendra. don't go judgy on yourself either. Decide what matters to you. So, for example, meal planning for me, I am not the kind of batching lady who's going to sit there and make soup or some kind of stew and I freeze it. Unpopular opinion, but I don't like frozen food. I would rather like make an omelet than warm up a meal. I think I also don't have a very nice microwave. So for me, the freezing batching approach is not going to work. But what I do batch is my shopping. And we go on a Sunday, the whole family goes, we go and do the shopping. And that then gets us through basically the whole week. And now grocery delivery is amazing, like just the on-the-day grocery delivery as well. So if we have forgotten something or we need something midweek, then we call the grocery delivery. So that's my idea of batching, is having stuff in the fridge that I can then cook. I've batched, I think it's more the shopping and the acquiring the food side of things. Once I've got that, I suppose then the routine kicks in and I'm okay to actually do the cooking. So yeah, so that's what matters to me, is having food available to then cook. And that's my rebel version of batching.
That is very much a rebel way of batching, Shelley. I love it. Yeah. Whereas, as we've said a few times, I am a complete upholder. So when I was working 14-hour days in corporate back before I had kids, I used to batch cook meals on the weekend. So I didn't cook like the one thing for the whole week. That would be awful. But what I would do is perhaps decide I was going to make a huge big pot of bolognese sauce, and I'd turn that into multiple smaller containers of bolognese sauce to be frozen for a number of different meals for the subsequent weeks. And I might turn it into a big lasagna, which, because it was just the two of us, that would do again two or three different meals. We'd eat it one night, and then maybe two nights later we'd have it again. And so I'd also do soups and, you know, chicken and leek pies or other things like that. So I do a lot of different things that I would then stretch into multiple different meals. And it wasn't for every single night of the week, but really 14-hour days, Monday through Friday, and then often working on a Saturday afternoon too at home, would mean that I really needed to be quite strategic in making sure I had food, because basically defrosting and reheating from frozen was the only way we were going to actually really have any dinner.
I just think it's a great example of what matters to you in that season. You know, what mattered to you was quick, easy, like, you know, getting some good nutrients in as well. But your season was 14-hour days. It's crazy. Yeah.
And it wasn't quick, because it did spend all day Sunday cooking the meals for the week.
So it
definitely wasn't quick. But it was, what mattered to me was nutritious food. And by making it from scratch myself and then freezing it so that we could then eat it later on, that was kind of what mattered, was nutritious food for my husband and I. So now, fast forward many, many years, I have boys who are incredibly active and always hungry. So where I batch is, like you, I shop once a week. So I just do my shopping batched. But I also have a meal plan aligned with our schedule. So I plan ahead for quick and easy meals on the nights when we have a lot of extracurricular activities, and other options for the nights we are all home to eat together. So the change that's happened recently is my older boy is now working three nights a week too. So that has added a bit of a complication into that. And we've also chosen to go vegan Monday through Thursday. So meal planning has taken on a whole new vibe. So it's less batching, I think, and probably moves us right on into principle 10, which is to essentialize. So, Shelley, I'm going to throw to you to talk a little bit about principle 10.
Yeah, so essentialism, or essentialize, and what Kendra says is that if it isn't essential, it's just noise. So this is where naming what matters, that shows you what is essential. So Rowena has named what matters is that they're going vegan Monday to Thursday, so that's what matters, and then that then frames your decisions. So you name what matters, you remove what's in the way of that thing that matters. So that does mean you can give away pans that you don't need, or, you know, you don't need to go and buy meat and animal products. And then you keep only the essentials. So also that's, you know, that in your going vegan example, that could mean particular cooking equipment, the actual foods that you eat in. But with all things, with essentializing, you need to start small. So I like that you know, like you're going vegan Monday to Thursday. So you're starting small, and you could even just have one vegan night, for example, if you were starting small. I know you've ramped up to
this. That's what we did. Yeah, we ramped up to it. We started with one, and then we slowly worked up, and now we do Monday through Thursday. But just dinner.
Yes.
I have to say, it's not lunch and breakfast. Kids are not ready to give up their milk on their cereal or their cheese on their lunch.
Yeah, and I think that's the secret to all of this, is to start small and work within what matters to you and your family. You know, this is not a perfectionism competition. So as I mentioned, I've got the Lazy Genius Kitchen, and her steps there are to prioritize, to decide what matters. Then you essentialize to go, okay, like what is it that I really need, and actually get rid of the things that I don't. Then you organize your kitchen in this case, you personalize, and then you systematize. And I think this can apply to, it's not just the kitchen. It can apply to anything in life, because I think sometimes we want to apply these systems too early and we haven't actually gotten rid of what's not serving us. Kendra says in the book, and I'm going to quote from the book, she says, "The more you choose what's essential and intentionally support what matters, the less noise you have to manage and the more energy you have for a fulfilling life," end quote. So I'm really all for reducing the noise and embracing more energy and fulfillment. And so that's why I'm trying hard to embrace this essentialism principle. It's a hard one. It's a challenging one. But I know for you, Rowena, that essentialism, intentionality, these are all things that have really resonated with you personally and are also quite a core part of your business as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, you're right. It is hard. Even though it's very much focusing on what's essential and being more intentional about both my life and my business is definitely my thing, it doesn't mean it's not hard. It's simple, I guess. That's essential can also be simple. Simple doesn't always mean easy. But perhaps the easiest example is, again, we go back to meals. So for me, naming what really matters was having healthy family meals together. So as much as possible, we remove the things that get in the way. This is the essential steps. We avoid extracurriculars that occur at dinner time as much as possible. And my husband and I prioritize our family time rather than taking work calls, again, as much as possible. You know, life does happen. So we're quite deliberate about how we make family dinners happen, because that was the first thing, remember, name what really matters. So naming what really matters for us was quality family meals together. And then we follow the steps that way. But in order to embrace essentialism and intentionality, principle 11 comes into play. And principle 11 is go in the right order. So now this principle for me is a pretty big one, because as someone who has leanings towards perfectionism, the steps here are vital, because it's quite possible for me to get kind of caught up with how I visualize something happening, imagining it to be perfect in my mind, and then be actually super stressed when it doesn't go that way at all. So instead, these steps encourage me to remember what truly matters and calm my perfectionist ways. So calming that crazy right down, and then we just need to trust that it'll all work out, and that even if it's not perfect, it's not the perfect I imagined, it will still be wonderful. Mm. And that, especially as she says, you're the best person to know what you need. So that trusting in yourself also applies for knowing what I need in the moment. So sometimes in the midst of all the crazy, the thing I need most is solitude. So, for example, we might be having a fabulous Christmas day and it's not quite as I imagined, but, you know, it's pretty good. But in the middle of all of that, what I really need to do is duck away for 10 minutes just to kind of catch my breath. But listening and trusting myself is what I need to do, which actually ties pretty nicely with principle 12, which is to schedule rest. So if you want to embrace what matters, you need mindfulness to do it. And if you want to get stuff done, you need energy to do it. All of these, they're all fueled by rest. So part of it is around looking at developing rhythms of rest, whether that be around seasonal. So, for example, for me, I know I always like to have a bit of time off in winter because my body doesn't want to be running 1,000 miles an hour when it feels like it should be hibernating. So I have seasonal rest around winter, and then again around summertime when it's, you know, fun time, it's holidays, it's playtime. It can be weekly rest. There is absolutely merit in the idea of having a day off each week where you have time away from whatever the thing is that drains your energy. You can have daily rest. And she also encourages us to consider soul rest, where you rest your soul or you restore the energy to your soul. So as I mentioned earlier, walking with my friends and catching up with them can be a beautiful way for my soul to rest and restore. Or being out in nature, that's another one. I love going to the beach and just walking on the sand and hearing the waves crashing. That is a really soulful rest for me. But the key thing here is that rest doesn't happen on its own. You have to schedule it. So, Shelley, I know your family is pretty good at scheduling in your rest times and your holiday times. Do you have some tips here around scheduling rest as well?
Yes, I think that that schedule word is really important. That is the most important word because by default, we are just going to be go, 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 go all the time. Yes, for us, we love our family vacations and we can do that because we're homeschooling. And we also use our birthdays as little anchors of like each person in the family gets a birthday holiday. They get to choose where we want to go most of the time. We sometimes have to put a little bit of boundaries on the boys that they, you know, planning some really flashy, fancy ones. And we're like, wait a minute, guys. But then I do know they're like, oh, yeah, this place is expensive and this place is cheaper. And so that has been lovely for actually getting away and going on holidays. And I've really tried to be quite strict about not taking any laptops, not taking any technology. And some of our favorite places we go to don't have a lot of Wi-Fi. So just cutting off from the rest of the world. Scheduling rest also ties in beautifully to the final principle, be kind to yourself. And part of that is self-care. And I'm going to quote another phrase because I love Kendra's take on self-care. She says, self-care should be a regular practice of doing what makes you feel like yourself. It's a practice of remembering who you are, end quote. And if you want some help in trying to get to know yourself and remember who you are, we did an episode 4 off of the 4 tendencies about getting to know yourself. Maybe you want to go and listen to that one. But you want to do a self-care thing that makes you feel like you. So you got to get to know yourself and get to know what you like and when you come alive. So Rowena, as we wrap up this episode, can you please tell our listeners what are you reading at the moment?
I've just finished reading a book called The Things That Matter by an Australian author called Sally Hepworth. And it's a really interesting book. It is a fiction, so it's a novel. The main character, one of the main characters, is very young and she's got Alzheimer's and she's in a residential care facility. So it's fascinating from that perspective, but I just loved it. Couldn't put it down.
You're going to ask me what I'm reading.
Yeah? You didn't. So, Shelley, what are you reading at the moment?
I'm actually reading with my kids. I am going to tell you a kids one. I'm reading Beverly Cleary's from the Ramona series. I'm reading Ramona Quimby, age 8. And I just adore the series of books. It was written in the 1970s, I believe.
Yeah, so I remember reading them.
Oh, they're also
in the 70s.
Gorgeous.
Oh, probably maybe the early 80s.
Yeah.
I loved Ramona.
Oh, she is so gorgeous. There is so many life lessons, so much that is still so relevant today. You know, it's really aged well. There's a few things like, but it's more references to like the telephone and how they dial on the telephone that doesn't, you know, translate to today. The actual humanity of it really translates, and just the feeling of being a kid and what these kids are going through. It sparks so many beautiful conversations with my kids. So that one won an award, a Caldecott Award or a Newbery Award, I believe. And that particular one, Ramona Quimby, age 8. Love it. Love that whole series. If you're looking for something to read with your sort of elementary age kids, love it so much.
Nice. So let us know your thoughts and how you're lazy geniusing your life. You can find us on Instagram. I'm Rowena Mabbott on Instagram. And Shelley, where can everyone find you?
I am Shelley Smith Creative on Instagram, where you can comment on the post for today's episode. And you can also find the podcast's website. We have a website with all the previous episodes at twobookedup.com.
And please tell your friends about us and about Two Booked Up. Send them to twobookedup.com. Or you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And then please subscribe to the podcast or follow us on your podcast player. That's the best way to get all future episodes of Two Booked Up.
Thanks so much for joining us on Two Booked Up today. Bye for now.